Now, Ask Dr. Love with psychotherapist, author, love and relationship expert Jamie Turndorf, Ph.D. For expert advice on love and relationships, call into the show at 888-463-6748. That's 888-GO-FOR-IT. Or you can submit your question online at AskDrLove.com. Now, here's Dr. Love.
Hello again, and welcome to Ask Dr. Love Radio. I'm Dr. Jamie Turndorf, and I'm so happy to be with you again today. Did you know that it's been estimated that 20 to 40% of girls and 2 to 9% of boys are sexually abused by the time they reach age 18? Well, childhood sexual abuse may hinder the development and growth of relationships, and survivors may experience difficulties with trust and fear of intimacy, difficulties with affection, fear of being different or weird, difficulty establishing interpersonal relationships and boundaries, passive behaviors, getting involved in abusive relationships, sexualizing relationships, inappropriate seduction, compulsive sexual behavior, promiscuity, problems concerning desire, arousal, and orgasm, flashbacks, difficulty with touch, and sadomasochistic tendencies. So if you or anyone you know has been abused, then stay with me for this very important show. I'm going to not only talk about all the aspects of abuse, but I'm going to talk also about how you and or someone who's been abused can help get healing. Now, I also have three questions for you today. The first one, I pick the questions, of course, that relate to the topic whenever I can. This one's called Man Afraid of Intimacy Due to Sexual Molestation in Childhood. And in this question, I'm helping out a young man who was repeatedly raped by his sister when he was a child. And as a result, he is repulsed by women and he thinks of himself as gay. Now, he's unable to come out of the closet due to his culture and that they don't accept gayness in his culture, and he's plagued with fear over how he's going to manage getting married and performing sexually with a woman. So stick with me to discover my recommendations for how he can heal and set himself free. The second question I'm calling Teenage Stepson, and here I'm helping out a stepmother who lost her cool when she walked in on her 14-year-old stepson being masturbated by an older neighbor girl. She threw the girl out, won't allow him to see her again, and now her stepson isn't talking to her. So stick around to find out what she's got to do to clean up this mess with her stepson. Third question is, husband wants divorce, never loved me 32 years later. And in this sad question, I'm working with a 61-year-old woman who is heartsick over her husband's announcement that he never loved her and he wants a divorce so he can go out and finally find love. So stick around to find out how I'm going to help her handle this bombshell. And of course, I'm going to try to give you a reading between the sheets segment here where I take your toughest sexual problems and I read between the overt surface of the problem to figure out what's really going on. And in this question, wondering why she's dead from the waist down, I'm helping out a young man whose beloved girlfriend's sex drive has suddenly just dried up. And he says they're madly in love and he can't figure out what's wrong. So stick around to find out the reason why her sex drive has gone undercover. Okay, so let's get down to today's topic, childhood sexual abuse. Now, childhood sexual abuse is any sexual behavior directed toward a child by a person who has power over that child. And such behavior always involves a betrayal of the child's trust. Now, some forms of sexual abuse involve physical contact, including masturbation, intercourse, fondling, oral sex, and anal or vaginal penetration with fingers, the penis, or objects. Other types of sexual abuse, such as exhibitionism, leering, and sexual suggestiveness, they don't involve physical contact, but they are still abuse. Now, people who sexually abuse children do so in order to meet their own needs. Abusers don't have the child's best interest in mind, obviously. And abusers need not be strangers. They can be anyone in a position of power or trust, like fathers or uncles, cousins, stepfathers, siblings, mothers, teachers, babysitters, neighbors, grandparents, peers, clergy, or even doctors. Now, how prevalent is childhood sexual abuse? And as I said, it's been estimated that 20 to 40% of girls and 2 to 9% of boys are sexually abused by the time they reach age 18. And these are probably conservative estimates since many incidents of sexual abuse are actually not reported. Now, interestingly, when I was doing research on this show, I found out something that was really remarkable. Little is known about the prevalence of child sexual abuse in the Asian American communities. And existing research overwhelmingly suggests that the reporting of sexual abuse of Asian American children is proportionately lower than those for other ethnic groups. And this could mean that the prevalence of child sexual abuse is lower in Asian Americans, or that Asian Americans are not as likely to report when child sexual abuse actually does happen. And there was a research by Rao and his colleagues that suggests that Asian American children may respond differently than other ethnic groups. Unlike children from other groups, the research says that Asian Americans are more likely to express thoughts of suicide or attempt suicide and are less likely to respond with anger or inappropriate sexual behaviors. And Asian Americans also differ from other ethnic groups with respect to the response of the primary caretaker, usually the parent. The research found that compared to caretakers from other ethnic groups, Asian American caretakers were least likely to report abuse to the authorities and more likely to disbelieve the abuse and least likely to complete evaluation and treatment of the abuse victim. And Asian American cultural values have been implicated to explain the low prevalence rates for reported child sexual abuse and the response patterns in Asian American families. And specifically, researchers have suggested that many Asian Americans fear a loss of face from others and tend to keep problems within the family. And in addition, because Asian American families tend to be patriarchal, reporting child sexual abuse when the perpetrator is the father can lead to significant disruptions in the family structure. Now, how can you know if you were sexually abused? So if you remember, if you do remember being sexually violated as a child, trust your memories. Because even if what you're remembering seems too awful to be true, trust yourself. Because children don't make things up. So, and at the same time, it's common for individuals who have been abused not to have clear memories. So one way of coping with sexual abuse is to repress or forget that it ever happened. And even in the absence of conscious memories, certain experiences can trigger intense feelings of fear, nausea, and despair. And some of these triggers include specific sounds, smells, tastes, words, and facial expressions. So whether or not you have specific memories, if you suspect that you were sexually abused, then you probably were. And often the first step in remembering involves having a hunch or a suspicion that some type of violation occurred. So pay attention to these feelings. For people who suspect that they were sexually abused, generally they will discover that if they pay attention, they'll discover that they have been. Now, many people will ask me, well, if it happened way back then, why do I have to deal with it now? Well, there are many factors that make it impossible for children to receive the help that they need at the time of the abuse. And unfortunately, many children who do seek support are met with reactions such as disbelief, lack of concern, and even blame of the victim. So despite efforts to seek help, the abused may continue. The abuse may continue or even get worse. And there are many understandable reasons why children don't seek help at the time of the abuse, because abusers often scare children by threatening to retaliate or by insinuating that the child isn't going to be believed. And the abuser may also confuse the child by implying that the abuse was the child's fault. Comments like, you know, you asked for it. You were all over me. I know you enjoyed it. They are often used to blame the child and the victim and keep the person in a state of silence. And just, you always have to remember, tell yourself, tell any child, sexual abuse is never the child's fault. Now, for whatever reason, if the abuse is not dealt with at the time that it occurs, its damaging effects will be present years, years, years to come. So what are some of the effects of child sexual abuse? Now, there are many ways that people experience the harm that results from having been sexually abused. Now, initially, the effects of sexual assault and rape are physical, obviously, bleeding, vaginal or anal, difficulty walking, soreness, broken or dislocated bones, even STDs, and if the child is old enough, there are 5% of the sexual abuse cases that result in pregnancy. Now, after a traumatic experience like rape or an assault, it's common for the survivor to feel shaken and sort of unlike him or herself. And it's a complex form of trauma that breaches the physical, the mental, and the spiritual trust of the person against his or her will. And This is especially damaging to a child whose brain is highly elastic during the formative years. We're also going to see PTSD symptoms. So it's triggered by a terrifying event. And common symptoms associated with PTSD are flashbacks and nightmares, anxiety, uncontrollable thoughts about the event. And due to the high levels of stress caused by the abuse, a person can experience chronic fatigue, shortness of breath, muscle tension, involuntary shaking, changes in eating and sleeping patterns, and even sexual dysfunction. And in women, issues of menstrual cycle and fertility issues are also common. And many people who go through traumatic events have difficulty adjusting and coping for quite some time. But with time and support, such traumatic reactions usually get better. We're also going to see, in many cases, depression. It's more than just a feeling of temporary sadness. And symptoms can include prolonged sadness, feelings of hopelessness, unexplained crying, changes in appetite with significant weight loss or gain, loss of energy, loss of interest, and pleasure in activities that you previously enjoyed. And it can even affect your outlook on life, feelings of hopelessness. And this in turn can impact your thought process and ability to make decisions. And in extreme cases of depression, people may even experience suicidal thoughts and or attempts at suicide. Now, if you or someone you know is experiencing suicidal thoughts, refer them to the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. And there's an 800 number. It's 1-800-273-TALK. Now, you're also going to notice in cases of sex abuse, dissociation. And this usually refers to feeling like you've checked out. You're not fully in your own skin. In some cases, you may even feel like you're daydreaming or sleepwalking. And in chronic dissociation, I'm really not getting my words out today, it can actually impair your ability to function in the real world. It's like you're not able to concentrate on your work or your schoolwork. And some survivors may actually also engage in substance abuse or drugs or alcohol to help them cope or numb out the overwhelming feelings. So there are also long-term effects. These are the short-term effects. Now, the long-term effects are going to be the effects to your self-esteem. So let me give you a couple questions that you can ask yourself to see if this is your case. Do you feel like you're not worthwhile as a person? Do you feel dirty, bad, ashamed, like just ashamed of yourself? Do you have a hard time nurturing yourself? Do you feel that you have to be perfect? And do you feel emotional long-term effects? Like, do you feel angry? Do you feel like blame, or do you live in a state of shock, numbness? Do you feel out of control? Do you feel helpless? Do you feel a sense of vulnerability, fear, and again, self-blame, guilt, or even the thoughts that it was your fault that you allowed the crime to happen? Do you even have trouble knowing how you feel? Have you ever worried about going crazy? Can even be hard for you to differentiate between various feelings or experience a very narrow range of feelings or feel afraid of your feelings or feel out of control. And in terms of your body, you may feel like you're not present in your body. You've left your body, a restricted range of feelings in your body, aware of what your body is telling you, or have a hard time loving and accepting your body. You might even have a physical illness that you think might be related to past sexual abuse, or you might have even intentionally hurt or abused your body. And then you might have difficulty with intimacy, not able to trust others, afraid of people, or alienated and lonely. You might have trouble making a commitment, feel panic when people get close to you, expect people to leave you, or be involved with someone who reminds you of the abuser or someone you know is not good for you. And you may also have difficulty with your sexuality, that you might try to use sex to meet needs that aren't sexual, or you might feel exploited sexually or use sexuality in a way that exploits others, or you might not be able to stay present when you're making love, go through a numb feeling or a panic feeling. You might find yourself avoiding sex or pursuing sex that you really don't want to have, or you might even experience flashbacks during sex. All right, I'm going to take a brief break. When I come back, I'm going to talk with you about what we can do to help you heal. Stay with me. I'll be back with you in a moment.
You're listening to Ask Dr. Love with Dr. Jamie Turndorf. To speak to Dr. Turndorf live on the air, call 888-463-6748. AskDrLove.com is the web's premier relationship advice site since 1996. Visit AskDrLove.com to search thousands of free relationship advice articles on any relationship issue you may have. Or you can submit a question to her free advice column. However, if you're listening live, why not call in? Don't be shy. Dr. Turndorf wants to help you, and this is a unique chance to get a personal answer from one of today's most respected experts. So, if you have a question for her, please call in now at 888-463-6748. That's 888-463-6748. You're listening to Ask Dr. Love with Jamie Turndorf, Ph.D. Once again, here's Dr. Love.
Hello again, and welcome back to Ask Dr. Love Radio. Today I'm talking about surviving childhood sexual abuse. And this is my time in the show that I call the quickie. It's a short segment, so let's get right down to it. First, let me just give you a couple more statistics. I said before that 28 to 33% of women and 12 to 18% of men were victims of childhood. Actually, before I gave you a slightly different statistic, this statistic is from research from Roland and Long, Burnett and Thomas, 2002-2006. This is a huge number. And they say that sexual abuse that doesn't include touch and other types of sexual abuse are reported less often, which means that this number of individuals who have been sexually abused in their childhood may actually be greater. Now, sexual assault affects many lives, both directly and indirectly, because it can span age, sexual orientation, religion, and gender, and it affects people of all socioeconomic backgrounds and education levels. And a 2010 study by the CDC, that's the Center for Disease Control, found that 1 in 5 women are raped in their lifetime in the U.S. That's almost 22 million women. And 1 in 71 men are raped in their lifetime, or approximately 1.6 million men in the U.S. Now, it's a common misconception that sexual assault and rape are mostly perpetrated by strangers. In fact, most survivors know their perpetrators in some way. And according to the Bureau of Justice statistics, 60% of survivors are assaulted by an intimate partner, relative, friend, or acquaintance. And this rate is even higher for women who've been raped or sexually assaulted in college. Now, while sexual assault can affect anyone at any point in his or her life, 79.6% of female rape victims were under the age of 25 when the incident occurred, and 42% had been raped before the age of 18. And this puts young people at a disproportionately larger risk of sexual assault. Now, although sexual assault more commonly affects women, men are also affected. And it's estimated that 1 in 4 women and 1 in 6 men experience an unwanted sexual experience in their lives. And while these numbers may seem daunting or difficult to process, the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network, R-A-I-N-N, estimates that the rate of sexual assault has fallen by more than 60% since 1993. Now, remember, the healing process takes time. Safety and attention to self-care is so vital for you. Finding small activities that bring peace and joy, such as practicing meditation once a day, painting or cooking, can make a world of difference. And just as a person will react to a traumatic event differently, each person is going to heal according to his or her own methods and own time. So know that no one is alone in his or her healing process. There are resources for you out there if you want to seek them out and begin restoring and healing yourself. Now, I know you may be thinking, will I ever feel better? And the devastating effects of sexual abuse don't need to be permanent. Just keep remembering that. You can heal. You've already survived the worst, the abuse itself. You have choices now that you didn't have then. And if you choose to commit to your own healing process, have patience with yourself, and let others support you along the way, you can learn that it is possible not only to survive, but to experience what it means to be truly alive. So where do you begin? So, if you think you've been sexually abused, speak with a trained professional. This can be very, very helpful. You don't need to be alone in your pain. In fact, breaking the silence is one of the most important components of the healing process. Make an appointment with a professional who's going to understand what you've been through. And let me give you some other resources for additional help. Read the book, The Courage to Heal by Ellen Bass and Laura Davis. The Courage to Heal Workbook by Laura Davis. Victims No Longer by Mike Liu. Outgrow the Pain. It's a book for for and about adults abused as children. And the last but not least, Incest and Sexuality, A Guide to Understanding and Healing by Wendy Maltz and Beverly Holman. Also check out the website Joyful Heart. The site focuses on empowering survivors of sexual assault and rape. Let me give you a few tweets to just inspire you a little more. You can get past the wounds of the past. Never feel that you can't heal. And you can go from emotional reeling to emotional healing. And the secret to healing from abuse is to allow your anger to come loose. Believe and you can achieve. All right, let me take a brief break and I'll be back with you in a moment on Ask Dr. Love Radio.
You're listening to Ask Dr. Love with Dr. Jamie Turndorf. To speak to Dr. Turndorf live on the air, call 888-463-6748. That's 888-463-6748. If you like what you're hearing, you can learn about Dr. Turndorf's techniques for turning conflict into connection and healing in her critically acclaimed, groundbreaking book, Till Death Do Us Part, Unless I Kill You First, A Step-by-Step Guide for Resolving Relationship Conflict. Find out more about this book and read a free excerpt by visiting AskDrLove.com. This is Ask Dr. Love with Dr. Jamie Turndorf. And if you have a question for her, please call in now at 888-463-6748. This show is for you, the listeners, so please give her a call now. You're listening to Ask Dr. Love with Jamie Turndorf, Ph.D. Once again, here's Dr. Love.
Hello again, and welcome back to Ask Dr. Love Radio. I'm Dr. Jamie Turndorf, and I'm talking today about childhood sexual abuse, what you can do to survive and thrive. And I wanted to take a minute before I go into the questions and to talk to you about something that I have heard about in my own practice, and this is not something that is widely discussed. I have a patient who talked to me about having been abused in childhood by a child pornography sex ring. And her entire family fell prey to this. And it is not something people discuss. Rings of childhood prostitution, politicians, huge bands of people that are apparently going on and conducting these kinds of things under the radar. And the people who are victims of these kinds of rings feel completely alone and isolated because nobody believes them, and the people who perpetrate the abuse against them are in such positions of power. So I understand that there are websites out there that also talk about this. If this has been your case, please seek out support. Find these websites and open up the dialogue about this. Get support, because you are not alone. And if there's anybody who wants to call me, I know most people listen to the show after the fact, but if there's anybody who's listening and wants to share story with me, pain, call me. I'm here for you. All right, let me go into a question that's entitled, Man Afraid of Intimacy Due to Sexual Molestation in Childhood. Hello. I stumbled upon your website while searching for an answer to my condition. I'm a 25-year-old male and a virgin. I have had brief affairs in the past, but none of them led to any physical contact. I haven't even kissed, to be exact. My primary problem is that I'm afraid of having intercourse, and I am repulsed by even thinking about it. My fears stem, I believe, from my childhood experiences, which were repulsive for me. When I was very young, maybe when I was between 5 to 7 years old, I was the victim of forced incest by my own elder sister for a few years, and they finally stopped when I was about 9 or 10. My sister has always been very sexually active since her childhood, and she did not spare me when she found an easy way to get off using my body. Naturally, in her company, I became aware of all matters sexual even before the sexual molestations began. Her continued attacks made me hate the female anatomy and feel afraid of having intercourse. I found boys and men kinder, as I knew I would not be sexually harassed by them. This liking would not have mattered had I not become involved in a sexual liaison with another boy when I was around 12. Since then, I have liked and lusted the male form, though I haven't been sexually active for the last 9 years. I never had any intercourse with him, of course, being too young, but this lasted for 4 years, after which our paths separated. I was 15 then, and it's not that I am a misogynist. I like and admire good-looking girls, but I do not feel any sexual tension while watching them. I guess my homosexual experiences and lack of proper heterosexual experience is responsible for that, and I'm quickly approaching marriageable age, and I'm under severe stress and fear of failing to maintain a heterosexual relationship. And I should add that my family is terribly conservative, and no one knows I'm gay. Can I maintain a heterosexual relationship, become acclimatized to the female gender, and derive pleasure from it? Being gay is not an option for me at all, and I would like to have a family. I just can't imagine having sex, and I'll probably not even get an erection. Should I try having sex with a prostitute first to become sure of myself? Please help. I cannot embarrass myself or my parents, who are very good people. Oh, well. I am so, so sorry to hear about your struggle, because childhood sexual abuse, as you know from your own experience, it's correlated with much higher levels of depression, guilt, shame, self-blame, eating disorder, somatic concerns, anxiety, dissociative patterns, repression, denial, sexual problems, and relationship problems, which you are experiencing. Now, when a physical danger threatens our control, ability to escape, or is something we can't stop, we enact a natural instinct for survival. And this includes the body summoning a tremendous amount of energy to fight or to flee. And this just completely affects your body. And this is what's happened to you, because it's a kind of violence that lives on in your mind and your body and in your spirit in many ways. And you are living an aftermath of the assault that is really, really lasting. And it's lasting years after the offense. So what are we going to do? What are we going to do to help you? Now, I hear you say that living a gay lifestyle is not an option for you, and probably because of the culture in which you live. Now, I am thinking that the possibility that you believe you're gay is because you have turned to men as a refuge from women who trigger memories of your sister's abuse. Now, you know, in fact, I have experienced in my own practice a large number of women who become lesbians actually became lesbians after they were sexually abused. So it's very possible that you adopted a similar coping skill by turning to men, which hinders your ability to develop relationships with women. So I know you asked how you can get an erection with a woman, and should you try to bite the bullet and force yourself to perform with a prostitute? Well, that's like jumping into the deep end and flooding yourself. Before you would even consider going that route, I want you to take a step back and consider what you actually need to do to heal. Once you heal, you won't need to grit your teeth and think of England. When you're healed, you won't feel repulsed by women, and nor are you going to feel afraid of being intimate. So let's talk about how you can heal. Now, one thing I want you to know is that there is no systematized treatment method for survivors of sexual abuse, but there is some research about what works best. So first thing you need to do is you need to externalize your feelings about the abuse. Now, most abused people do not externalize their feelings, which means putting the anger outside of yourself. That means having the courage to feel anger towards your sister and even your parents who didn't protect you. And it also means properly attributing responsibility. So establishing your own sense of control and empowerment is also part of the healing. So it's vital for you to process, uncover, and describe your anger, because anger helps you feel empowered, helps you establish boundaries, helps you define your rights and needs, and find protective actions and behavior, and promote self-efficacy and power. So it's also going to be good for you to make the link between your sexual symptoms, like your revulsion and any other symptoms you have, and the past sexual abuse. So once you're clear on the link, it's easier to break the link. Part of your healing also is going to include establishing an intimate relationship in which you have a partner who supports you and knows about your past and supports you in your healing. And a loving partner is going to encourage feelings of safety and reconnection. It's going to help you adjust your sexual attitudes, going to help you gain a more positive sexual self-concept, feel more positive about women's bodies, learn how to cope with negative reactions to touch, and develop skills to positively experience touch and sexual intimacy, help you learn to integrate communication, choice, trust, respect, and equality into your intimate relationship, and also assist you in establishing physical and emotional safety, resolve distressing memories, and build lots of trust. So here's where a sex surrogate actually could help you. You could practice being intimate with a trained surrogate before you form a relationship with a woman. Now, beyond all these mainstream approaches, you might consider trying some of the new energy medicine techniques that are designed to literally reprogram your brain and free you from the chains of past traumas. And these therapies include body talk, NET, and EFT. Now, I found a video on YouTube that shows you how to do EFT on yourself to free yourself from sexual abuse trauma. And the link is www.youtube.com/watch?v=G9LL1GVQN3M. Now, don't worry about memorizing the link, because when you go to my website, I've posted my answer to your question, and in the answer post, I've actually included the hyperlink to this YouTube video so that you can go back there and actually take that link, and anyone else who's listening, take the link and use that technique to help free yourself. So please keep in touch with me. I want to hear how you do. All right, let me go to a next question, another question for you, and it involves a kind of sexual abuse, at least from the mother's point of view. It's called teenage stepson. So, hi, Dr. Love. I have a stepson who lives with me, and he's 14 years old. And I have to admit that my relationship is not the greatest right now with him. I have been his stepmother for most of his life, but lately he's been getting really out of control. My husband is a truck driver, and he's away, and so most of the time it's just the two of us. Now, the neighbor girl has been coming over after school every day, and she's really become a problem lately, not because she's coming over, but because they go into his room and close the door. So, casually, I come in every so often to keep an eye on them, because she is a couple years older and I wouldn't put it past her to take advantage. So I come in, and I'll spare you the graphics. She had her hand somewhere inappropriate, so I sent her home. My stepson wouldn't talk to me after that. His only response was, "We weren't doing anything." But I told him she's not allowed over anymore. Do you think I was overdoing it? Okay, so look, I do understand that you were shocked by what was going on with the neighbor girl. But the most important thing here is choosing a course of action that supports your relationship with him. Because tearing his friend from him and forbidding him from seeing her, as you have seen, has driven a wedge between you and him. Forbidding any kind of contact isn't the ideal way to teach him about his sexuality. Besides, when you forbid a teenager from doing something, he'll just want to do it all the more, just to rebel against your authority, because that's what a teenager does anyway. So let's face it, his body belongs to him. As much as you want to control him, you can't. And he can always find a way to be with this girl or someone else if he wants to. So instead of punishing him, talk to him. Discuss sex. Tell him that it's a divine gift to be shared with someone that you love. You can talk about the fact that the drive is strong at his age, which makes it easy to fall into casual sexual encounters. But the ideal is to bring our sexuality into a union of heart, mind, and soul. Now, masturbation is a good way to handle one's desire, no pun intended, until the right partner comes along, and you could say this to him. Now, if you speak with him in a way, the way that I said, your relationship will be repaired, and he'll also have a much better understanding about his own sexuality, which is what we want. So we want him to be informed, and we want also for you and him to be close. Now, if he feels embarrassed to talk directly to you, then what you could do is perhaps write him a little note. Go to my website, look at my answer to you, because my answer is, you know, posted and all written out there on the site. Every time I pick a question to answer on my radio show, I also post it on the site. So you could go there and you could use my answer as a little blueprint for you to write a note to him. And that way you could talk about this subject, which might be embarrassing for you or him, and bring out all the points that I raised, and he'll be able to absorb it, feel the connection to you, and also be educated. And I promise you, you will get along with him better as a result. All righty. So, you know, the topic of sex is one that embarrasses people so much, and of course sex abuse even more so. But the point is, we want to be able to pull back the covers, open the curtains, and we want to speak openly, because it is through open communication that we heal. Just putting our thoughts and feelings into words is the path to healing, the path to making our relationships stronger. So there you have it. Let me take a brief break. I'll be back with you in a moment on Ask Dr. Love Radio.
You're listening to Ask Dr. Love with Dr. Jamie Turndorf. To speak to Dr. Turndorf live on the air, call 888-463-6748. That's 888-463-6748. If you've recently been through a breakup and are looking for a second chance, wondering how you can reconcile with your ex, or if it's even possible after all you've been through, Dr. Turndorf's latest book, Make Up, Don't Break Up, presents her 5-step plan for reconciling with your ex. This plan was developed out of years of research, working with thousands of couples at her Center for Emotional Communication. This is a proven no-hype and no-nonsense method that gets right to the root of the problem to guide you to the right path towards reigniting a lasting relationship. For more about Make Up, Don't Break Up, visit AskDrLove.com. You're listening to Ask Dr. Love with Jamie Turndorf, Ph.D. Once again, here's Dr. Love.
Hello again, and welcome back to Ask Dr. Love Radio. I'm Dr. Jamie Turndorf, and it's my pleasure to be with you again today. I'm talking about surviving childhood sexual abuse. And I have a question that is peripherally related. Here, a wife is actually feeling emotionally abused by a husband who is tormenting her and telling her he doesn't love her after 32 years of marriage. Well, I'll tell you her words. Hi, I've read many other posts, but none relates directly to my problem, as my husband insists he never had that spark for me. My husband and I have been together 32 years, 27 years married, and it has been far from perfect since we come from different backgrounds and have disagreed more times than not. The bottom line is that he announced that he wants a divorce to find romantic love, a love like I have for him. He insists that he never loved me, and in the beginning he married me out of convenience and because I wanted to get married. I wanted to, but told him I would stay with him anyway. He already has a son from a previous fling, and he didn't want any kids. I said I would like a child, so he said okay, and 1 month later we were pregnant. We tried for a second, and after two miscarriages in between, we had our second son. Our kids have been great for both of us. However, back in 2011, he left me and got an apartment for about a month and then moved back. The second time he left was in January 2007, and again, getting an apartment, and he began dating someone local and also contacting a Ukrainian woman he found on a website. He also sent another woman flowers. He said he came back because the boys needed him. Now, flash forward to today. This almost 60-year-old man, I'm 61, tells me he wants a divorce. He says it would be much easier if he loved me, since we have a great relationship, now share common interests, get along well, and have a good sex life. But he says he's a risk taker, and he must search for romantic love, and don't worry, since he'll take care of me financially. We lost our house in 2011, and I lost my job. So we are both still at home together, sleep together, and do activities together. I want to save this marriage. What can I do? Please help, and thanks so much for all you do. sign never loved 32 years later. Well, I was really, and I am really heartsick to hear your story. And it's just so hurtful to be told that he never loved you. And I have to wonder, this is what I thought when I read your question. I had to wonder, why is he suddenly telling you this now? So I started wondering, is he only saying this to hurt you? Is it possible that he's angry with you? Does he resent you for roping him into marriage? Does he have a passive-aggressive personality? Is he a people pleaser, and is he punishing you for making him marry you? And I ask that question because I notice that he's presenting now like, well, I did it to please you. You wanted to get married. I didn't want a kid. You want a kid. These sound like very, very passive, dependent statements. And if he is a people pleaser and punishing you for making him marry you, I wonder this. Now, you haven't given me any direct reason to think so, but I'm lifting up every rock. And from the comments that he made and the way he complained, you know, I'm thinking right now of the case of someone who was very much like him, dependent, people pleaser, who did all kinds of things to do what his wife wanted. And then all of a sudden, after decades, one day it was sort of the straw that broke the camel's back, and he snapped. After all the sacrifices and all I've done for you, it was like it built up until the bag couldn't hold anymore. So I'm thinking I might be onto something there. Now, he also says he's a risk taker. Why has he suddenly become a risk taker at the age of 60? And I'm thinking he may be experiencing a belated midlife crisis. You know, the midlife is the time of life when men start taking risks in an attempt to recapture their youth and beat back death. So I'm thinking suddenly now the man who wasn't a risk taker has to be a risk taker at the age of 60. I'm suspicious that it is a belated midlife crisis too. So what can we do? First thing I would like you to do is explore the anger question. So linked to that is the question about whether he's just a people pleaser. And as I said, many people with this problem grow to feel victimized and angry for all the sacrifices that they made. I actually had a patient who, when he was dating, went bungee jumping with his girlfriend, and she was very clumsy. And he said to himself, she'll never quit if I don't quit. And she'll kill herself if we keep it up. So he quit, and he harbored resentment for the sacrifice. And one day it just came out, and he dumped her. So I'm thinking that he's victimized and angry over the sacrifices. And so if that line of inquiry, you know, where you explore the anger of, did he make sacrifices to be with you, and he's mad at you, and that's why he's coming out with this anger toward you now. If that inquiry yields a dead end, let's consider then the midlife crisis angle. Because if he's in a midlife, he should get over it. So I'll never forget this woman I know. She was an antique dealer, and her husband went nuts, left home, started dating a young girl, the whole nine. And she tells me that one day, late at night, she hears a pounding on her door. And it was her husband. He had his tail between his legs, asking if she'd take him back. He said that the young girl bored him and he missed his wife. So how can you handle this if it is a midlife crisis? And that's what it comes down to. So are you comfortable telling him that he can stay home and play at being young until it's out of his system? I know you want the marriage. Many women will make that decision to say, okay, do what you got to do and get it out of your system. Some women say leave and get it out of your system and come back when you're done with this playing. So I'm thinking we may be dealing with a convergence of more than one factor. Perhaps we're dealing with a dependent guy, married you to please you, had kid to please you, didn't love you passionately, maybe, and now his midlife crisis is pushing him to go for the gusto and find passionate romantic love before it's too late. Now, you might tell him that in the end, if he's lucky, he'll end up with what you both have now, a lovely companionable relationship that includes sex. I mean, he could go out there, find passionate romantic love, and if he's lucky, he'll end up with what you've got now. So he could break up your marriage, go after the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, and maybe he'll have a period of intense passion, but then what? Ultimately, he'll end up with what you both have now. So I've shot off all my flares for you, and I am rooting for him to come back to his senses. Talk to him, you know, following the outline that I gave you, and then do keep in touch with me and let me know what happens. This is very, very important. I want to hear. All right, so I have a reading between the sheets question, but I also want to just tell you for a moment now, when I answer your questions online and here on the radio, I would like you, if you could take a moment, go to my website. There's a commenting feature. I'd like to have more of a dialogue with you. Place a comment. Tell me how my answer works for you. Give me the feedback so that our relationship is furthered, so that I'm invested in you. When I answer the questions that you ask me, I want to know how you're doing. I want to hear follow up from you. So post a response. Let me know what worked, what didn't work, what you need more of. I want to keep the dialogue going. Also, another thing, like my fan page on Facebook, I have a new webmaster now, and my new webmaster is saying, Jamie, you've got a huge following, and ask your people to like you on Facebook. It's kind of dumb if you think about it that these kinds of things matter, but in the world today, people look at the number of likes on Facebook, and I never did anything to pursue the Facebook page and pursue the likes, so do that for me, because it's a way of giving back something to me for all the time that I invest in you, in putting these shows together and answering the questions. So follow me on Twitter, like me on Facebook, and also buy my books when they come out. It's another way of supporting what I'm doing for you, because my ministry here is a completely free charitable ministry. I have been doing this for more than 15 years. How many years has it been? 93? Almost 20 years now since the web began. I've been doing this charitable ministry, and it doesn't make me a dime. I completely invest in this to help you. And one way to bring back something to me is buy my books. And I have two books that are going to be coming out very soon. Hay House. You know, Hay House, that very, very big publisher. They publish all the top spiritual authors. They published Deepak Chopra and Wayne Dyer. They just bought two books of mine. The first book that they bought is called Kiss Your Fights Goodbye, which brings out my whole proven conflict resolution method. That book's going to be coming out in January. And then in the spring, they're going to be publishing my book that shows you how to reconnect and make peace with the deceased, and presents my conflict resolution method brought to the world of after-death communication. So that'll be in the spring. Not sure of the title of that, but when we get a little closer, I'll tell you about that. Alrighty. So now let me do the reading between the sheets question, and here it is. And oh, here's another little thing. I'm doing a lot of housekeeping today. When you submit questions to me, make sure to use the right contact form on my website. Because if you just use the general contact form, it doesn't go into the database and get input. And that's important, because if it's input into the database, then when I answer your question, you will receive an automatic notice from my site saying to go back to my website to look for my answer. If you just use the general contact form, your question isn't in the database, and I have no way of letting you know that I've chosen your question to answer. And this is one of those questions. So I'm hoping that you're listening to the show and that you realize that I've answered you, because I had no way of telling you. All right, so here it is. Dear Dr. Love, I'm a 25-year-old educated male, and my girlfriend is a gorgeous 22-year-old. We are madly in love and know that we will be spending the remainder of our lives together. We are generally very happy with our lives and our relationship. We complement each other in every way. Now, we have been together for 19 months. Initially, her sex drive was very high, and there was very much experimentation and exploration of each other's sexuality. And she can generally orgasm within a few short minutes, and she can sometimes orgasm 10 times during a 20-minute lovemaking session. You go, girl. As time went on and the novelties of the relationship wore off, ending of the honeymoon period, we became aware of what specifically will turn the other on, and we stuck to the same sexual routine for the next 10 to 12 month stage of our relationship. The last 6 months, her desire for sex progressively declined, yet our romance and love maintained its strong position. We would have had sex maybe 6 times in the last 2 months. Half of those 2 months were spent on holidays, having a wonderful time and being connected. She is clearly unhappy about this, and we've discussed strategies to overcome this, but they don't seem to work, and the same justification kept coming up. The justification was often to do with the time hasn't been right, and both of us know that this is a simple excuse. She's never been into self-masturbation. She takes the birth control pill, and she also doesn't exhibit signs of normal menstruation. Her body experiences the natural menstruation cycle, both hormonally and psychologically, but she doesn't bleed. And she's had this assessed by a team of obstetrician gynecologists, and they explain that she's the lucky few people that have this presentation, and her fertility is unaffected. And she doesn't take any other medications. She uses small amounts of marijuana weekly. She experiments with other drugs infrequently. She's never had a significant loss of sexual desire, and she's been sexually normal in her previous relationships. And I've asked if her loss of desire has anything to do with dissatisfaction with our sex style, and she denies this. And we have a trusting and loving relationship, so I wouldn't suspect that she would be telling me lies pertaining to a potential dissatisfaction with me. So how could this be? What is the best approach to overcoming her lack of sexual desire? Okay, I know the answer to the mystery. So you mentioned that your girlfriend's sex drive abruptly stopped, and I'm betting that it's the birth control pill that's affecting her. And I bet she wasn't on the pill when you began your relationship. And if you're like many couples, once you became exclusive, you tossed the condoms in favor of the birth control pills. Now think about what the pill does. It creates an unnatural hormonal state by stopping ovulation. And ovulation is linked to desire. Ovulation is linked to the biological urge to have sex in order to get pregnant. Her body isn't getting the right signals. Now, if you read the insert that accompanies the oral contraceptives, it says, this is the fine print, it says the pill can cause side effects that include weight gain, breast tenderness, nausea, dizziness, and, drum roll please, loss of libido. 30% of American women suffer from a diminished sex drive, and some experts as well as non-experts will tell you that the pill is to blame. And studies have linked oral contraceptive use to decreased levels of androgens, and these are the class of hormones, including testosterone, that are thought to drive both male and female sexuality. Birth control pills alter a woman's natural estradiol fluctuations, the group of hormones that include estrogen, which many OBGYNs consider the main source of female libido. And when you're on the pill, your hormonal balance changes, and consequently your desire for sex can easily change too. So I would have her stop the pill and use a barrier method like the diaphragm. And I'm banking on the fact that she's going to be raring to go once those synthetic hormones are sent packing. I'm not a fan of them, I got to tell you right now. I don't think we were meant to take them. I always encourage my patients to toss them. So promise to get back to me, because I am promising you that your sex life is going to be back on track, and maybe she'll even get a callus from overuse. All righty. That's all I have for you for today. I want to remind you, if you've been abused, use the sources that I have suggested earlier in the show. Listen to the show again. Hang in there. There is light at the end of your tunnel. And I will see you next week on Ask Dr. Love Radio.